This is my first time here. I'm not a health plan person, in full disclosure. I'm the president of the Clinically Integrated Network in the Central Marketplace of Florida, which is who holds the contract with Disney. So I've had the majority of those discussions. So if nothing else, I'll just bring you perspective. I have another hat, so I'm the responsible for mergers, acquisitions, and network development for Adventist Health System as a whole. So this is a journey that we've been on that has advanced pretty quickly. Again, in interest of full disclosure, I must say I have a 9-year-old, so the amount of money I've spent at Disney should entitle me to a major equity stake. Unfortunately, there's no equity stake there. So Disney has been a very interesting relationship. I use the term creating a Disney experience. How many people have been to Disney before, west or east? You know what the Disney experience is, right? They expect that same experience in healthcare. So I remember the first discussion I had with them, I thought, there's no way in God's green earth we can deliver a Disney experience in healthcare in a very disjointed healthcare delivery system. But that was the goal from the beginning. That's the goal at this point, and it will be the goal as we move forward. So let me kick off. I want to talk about who the players are, because you'll hear acronyms or terms, and I want to make sure you understand those. Create a context for the discussions. This has not been something that just happened overnight. It's been a long journey. Talk a little bit about who the Adventist Health System in Florida Hospital is and our perspective and how we got to where we are, and maybe why we made some of the decisions we've made along the way. I'll also say that I can be quite self-deprecating as part of this discussion. We're gonna show you some weaknesses that some of us might not typically show, because I think it's illustrative of the transparent journey that we've had with Disney. And we'll talk about Disney's perspective. So it is different than Boeing or Intel, who are focusing on providing high-level benefits to engineers where it's a very competitive marketplace, and trying to keep people at work. So there are some differences, but the fact of the matter is Disney's still trying to keep people at work. They're still in a very competitive marketplace in Orlando because they're not the only theme park, if you've heard of Harry Potter and Universal. We'll talk about the negotiation process, the commitments we made, and our deliverables, and then the rest of the story. So who's Adventist Health System? We're a 45-hospital system functioning in 9 states. We have 8,300 licensed beds. So Adventist Health System owns Florida Hospital. Florida Hospital is the name and the brand in Central Florida that people relate to. We have 3 regions that take us up and down the I-4 corridor from Tampa in the west to Daytona in the east, and that's 23 of the 45 hospitals within Adventist. 10 of those are within the 4-county marketplace that we have the relationship with Disney focused on. So that metropolitan service area is about 2.5 million people. Our extended service area is about 4 million within the CSA. 2,500 physicians on our medical staff, less than 20% of those are employed. So that gives you perspective as it relates to how we had to tackle the marketplace, and we'll talk more about that. The Florida Hospital Physician Network has been a thriving network now for a whole year and 4 months. We have nearly 1,900 participating physicians, of which less than 25% of those are employed. So again, great community physician involvement. Alignment is one of the key strategies. And we currently have about 100,000 lives that we have some degree of population health management responsibility for, which we'll talk more about. So the Walt Disney Company, 185,000 employees worldwide. Their benefits are managed by Disney Worldwide Services. They have different structures in different parts of the world, and yes, in different parts of the United States. It's key to understand that the decisions for Disney get made in Burbank, California. It doesn't matter what our reputation is in Florida. The decisions are being made by a group of people who come to Florida every once in a while. So again, the reputation that you have in one market may not really do much for you in the decision-making process. Walt Disney World Resort, 70,000 cast members and employees. You learn the difference very quickly that there are certain people you don't call cast members and there are other people you don't call employees. So if you work in the parks, you're a cast member. If you work at ESPN or another related, you're an employee of Disney. Four theme parks, two water parks. They have an on-site clinic, the Center for Living Well, which has nearly 25% of their members attributing there as patient-centered medical home. You see another 6,000 urgent care visits, 20,000 unique pharmacy visits. They've got a relationship with Walgreens. So they have a robust program that's managed by a third-party company. So start to understand there's lots of players that are in the picture. So let me take you back to the beginning of how this all happened. So in 2011, early 2012, our CEO at the time, Lars Holmen, was also responsible for the state of Florida's Economic Development Commission. And they would have frequent meetings with area leaders talking about how they boost economic development. At the end of one of those meetings, the CEO of Disney said, Lars, I'd like to keep you for a little while and maybe we can have a discussion. And at the time, the CEO of Disney said, you're the largest health system in the marketplace. We're the largest employer. We need your help. We cannot continue to sustain double-digit increases in our healthcare cost. We have a competitive environment. We have a union environment. We need you to work with us, not against us, and be part of the solution. And we're looking to you and your support to be able to do that. So from that meeting came this concept of a committable network. So Lars Holmen came away and said, I need to be able to have a committable network to take to Disney and be able to implement change. So for those of us who knew Lars, he comes from a psychiatric background. So we really started wondering, what's a committable network, right? Are we all in it? So this concept of a committable network was bounced around, and as things sometimes happen in companies, people would sit at meetings and say, we need a committable network. And if you asked anybody what a committable network was, they'd give you a different definition. It was actually quite funny. A couple of years later, and this is at the beginning of 2014, we had an annual medical staff retreat, and I had just moved over. Some of you know David Banks, who is part of our strategy group, who's come to a number of these meetings. David and myself and a few other people had moved over and formed a strategy team within our Florida division. So the first time that Florida Hospital or Adventist Health had actually taken resources and dedicated them to thinking, looking at the future, trying to figure out how do we fit into this this whole component of healthcare. And so at that meeting with the medical staff leaders, one of the physicians stood up and said, Lars, I've heard you talking about this committable network for a couple of years now. When are we going to do something about it? And Lars, very quick thinker, said, you know, it's interesting that you should say that, doctor, because Mark is going to think about that, and at the next meeting, he'll have a solution to that. And so as we were leaving the room, he patted me on the back and said, good luck with that. So that was really the start. The start was our physicians recognizing that we needed to do something differently in the marketplace, the hospital recognizing it because our employer community was telling us. And I'm pretty clear it wasn't just Disney that was saying that, but when the largest employer says it, you take note, certainly. So that's how the concept emerged. So during that period of time, we were really focusing on how do we move from first curve to second curve. Everybody's seen this slide. Well, let me tell you what that meant for us in Central Florida. So I came from Dallas, so coming back here last night, I realized why I don't live here anymore because of all the cedar in the air. But when I moved to Florida, I thought Texas was the last bastion of independence. And I realized, no, it's in Central Florida. So moving from first curve to second curve for us meant moving away from percent of charge to DRG. You laugh. We still haven't made that conversion all the way. So now nobody getting ideas about coming to Central Florida, because it is changing at this point in time. So we really spent a great deal of time not only educating our physicians about what this move in reimbursement was and the impact of change in business risk, but we also spent it with our hospital administrators. When you said we're going to invest $10 million, $15 million, $20 million a year to build an infrastructure to be able to address Disney, to be able to address Medicare Advantage, and the CFO would sit there, and at the end he'd raise his hand and said, let me get this straight. We're going to spend multiple millions of dollars to take people out of our hospital. Am I clear about that? So yeah, that's pretty much it. So again, this education process was a journey that Disney started that really we started to move down together. At that same time, we had our own TPA, and we had just formed a health plan called Concert Health Plan, the shortest lived health plan ever. I think we functioned for maybe a month or two, and we made the decision at that point in time that we needed a partner, and down the road in Brevard County was Health First Health Plan. We were going to have to replace systems. We were going to have to do a lot of different things. So we essentially repurposed our staff, and we'll talk about how we've done that, and we partnered with Health First to do all of our TPA back office focus, and to also be our marketing arm and insurance license to be able to go into the East Florida marketplace, which is Volusia and Flagler County's Daytona Beach area. We had a strong market position there, 60-plus percent. We had lower cost operations. We really thought this is a great place to pilot Medicare Advantage. We also rolled it out for small and mid-sized employers and have been in the individual market as well. So this has been our focus. If we can make it work here, we can roll it out to the larger central market, to West Florida, to other areas within the company. Great lesson learned. You can't move into Medicare Advantage and not change the physician compensation system. Great lesson learned. So again, all of these have been learnings for us as we've gone through this process. So let's talk about the realities that we had when we started to look at how do we build a network that can be a committable network to Disney. So I had come from the medical group side, so I ran our 400-plus physician medical group. And what I had become very clear of is that building a robust PCP network was not as simple or as inexpensive or as possible as we once thought it was. There's a reason people practice in one and twos, because they don't want to practice in any other setting. So we needed to take that into consideration. We could grow our specialists, but it was very expensive to do that and costly. We didn't have enough time, money, energy to build a relevant employed physician network with less than 20% of our medical staff on that side. And there was a lack of trust in the marketplace of the hospital employed folks versus the independent folks. We also knew through that process, as I was working with many of those community-based physicians and trying to get them to join, they really wanted to be aligned with us. They were loyal, but they didn't want to be employed. They didn't want their paycheck, but they wanted some sort of a deeper alignment. And we also started to recognize during that period of time that we needed the physicians, the power of the pen or the click of the mouse, to be more engaged in helping us control the cost. And probably worst of all of these factors was the relationship that we had historically clouded our thinking about what it could look like in the future. So when you started to talk about a committable network being something more that engaged and involved community-based physicians, we naturally went back to think about, well, we can't work with that group. Look at what they did 20 years ago. You know, I wasn't here 20 years ago. I don't care about that. I want to know what we can do with them as we move forward. So again, lots of focus and educating and getting people to think about moving forward. So these were, in our organizational meetings with some of the original physicians, the premises that we adopted. So we had to agree that the healthcare system's broken. The fee-for-service model isn't going to be able to last forever, and our current cost trends weren't sustainable. The care delivery must be performed in a more integrated fashion. Third and significant component, we were committed to a hybrid medical staff model. It didn't matter what other hospitals were doing. We embraced that community physician population, and we wanted to work with them as we historically had for the last 100 years. And that physician leadership was important. During this time, we've developed a physician leadership program. Our first class was 30 physicians and about a half a dozen hospital administrators. We hired a former Army general who had retired, who ran incredible training programs in the military. He came in and started that program. Since that point in time, we've had about 250 physicians who have gone through that leadership development program, and it's a very successful component of engaging people in our journey. So we also said, what's a committable network really mean? It's a promise to provide high quality care, right time, right location, right cost. Those things sound familiar. The triple aim, if you will. And we essentially and quickly came to say, this term committable we need to throw out, because what this really is a clinically integrated networking. And by the way, there have been people doing this for a long time. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We want to try to understand what others have done. So this is the purpose statement. You see it's triple aim focus. It is, and the key word there is physician-led partnership. So having physicians engaged in a very fair structure from a governance standpoint. We have 18 physicians, or 18 individuals on our board of directors. 12 of them are physicians. Half of them are primary care, half of them are specialists, half of them are employed, half of them are community-based. That's by charter that we've determined that. So we have people sitting together and talking for the first time that have really never talked about how to change care delivery. So our goals, motherhood, apple pie, Chevrolet, all of those things, but it was to create stickiness with our providers as well as reducing cost and waste in the process. We wanted to accelerate this, so this was occurring in the 2014-2015 time period. We engaged Advocate and their consulting arm. Advocate had been in business about 10 years, had 750,000 lives under management. We liked the model. What we really liked from their consulting services was it wasn't people coming in from out of town. We went and embedded in their operation. So we got to see each of the components. And we looked and we said, we know we're starting at point A, you're at point D. How do we get from A to D without crossing B and C? And we learned a tremendous amount of valuable lessons about what they did well, and probably more so what they didn't do so well and what they would have done differently. So we were able to jumpstart that. We're finishing up that third year agreement in September of this year. So you see we kicked this process off in October of 14. So it had a three-phase approach. The first month was an assessment, a quick 2 to 24 month to operationalize, and then to optimize in that third year period of time. And the whole focus was to be able to utilize our facilities, our physicians, both employed and independent, and to contract with our customers, insurers, employers, and we actually define as a system our customers as the individuals who consume healthcare and the employers who pay for it. So a mantra throughout our formation process was, is this the right thing for our customers? Is it the right thing to do for the individual? Is it the right thing to do for the employer? And if the answer was yes to both of those, 9 times out of 10, it wasn't necessarily the right thing to do for the physician or the right thing to do for the hospital system. But we knew we had answered the first two. So then our focus was, how do we mitigate those other customers who may, or those other people in the system that may have been harmed by that? So our focus was January 1 of 16, bring our Florida hospital lives in. So we brought 40,000 Florida hospital members in as of January 1 of 2016. We said that we want to eat our own cooking, and so that's what we have been doing. And lots of the things that we've worked on, we've tested with our employees first. We also knew that in 17 we wanted to bring in Medicare Advantage insurers or employers. That 17 launch with Medicare Advantage is actually delayed till January 1 of 18. But in 17, January 1, we brought 20,000 plus Disney lives and another 40,000 Cigna Collaborative Accountable Care lives in. And we also knew that we needed to build infrastructure or revamp infrastructure from that former TPA or insurance plan we had. So Jill mentioned earlier that she's part of the Population Health Services Organization, leads our care management effort. Our focus was, and we heard this and we'll talk about it a little bit more, we needed to repurpose, reorganize, and we couldn't rely on Health First or the insurance health plan component to do some of the things that Disney wanted us to do. They wanted it to be much more provider-centric, much more patient-centric, and so we said we're going to build those functions as a complement to the services that are being provided through our relationship with Health First. And so that's what we call our Population Health Services Organization. Okay, now I'm going to give you the Disney perspective, which is much more interesting. So in the fall of 2014, so back in 2011 and 12 was that first discussion, so it takes a big organization a little while to get organized and schedule the next meeting, right? Disney actually scheduled this one. And Disney said, we're coming to talk to you again. And the clear message in that meeting was, Orlando, we have a problem. And I'll show you some of the slides that indicated what that problem really is. So in the spring of 2015, we had this great idea that let's take a field trip with Disney. We're a transparent organization. Let's travel with them. So we called our friends at Presbyterian, our friends at Providence, and they also then called their friends at Boeing and their friends at Intel. And so we went off as a big, happy family to Albuquerque, to Portland, and to Seattle. So we looked at Intel in Albuquerque and in Portland. I'm not sure. I know that we weren't nervous about it. I don't think Disney was nervous. But I think the health plan partners in Boeing and Intel were all nervous because they weren't sure, what are these two sitting here together for, and what are we supposed to say and what are we not supposed to say? And in multiple instances, particularly Boeing and Intel said, do you want to just kind of meet privately and we'll kind of give you the real story? And Disney said, no, we really want you to tell us here. We're trying to work together to do this. So it was very interesting because we learned things like that we adopted. You can't use the same customer service people that you've been using in your traditional health plan setting. We want a concierge level service to interact with our employees. So you need to pull your best and brightest out and dedicate them to this. So there were a lot of things that were very focused on the experience, so that creating that Disney experience. And there were other things that at the time we thought, this is the best thing that could ever happen because Intel or Boeing were taking a very tough line position about how they negotiated something. One of those that I can recall was Boeing was saying, well, you know, the network benefits, we want our engineers to be able to go anywhere. And Disney said, how can you do that and have a high-performing network? And so we thought, this is great. Disney's really siding with us. This is going to be an easy negotiation. Don't ever rely on your initial impression. So in the summer of 2015, we had a meeting then that was not just the people we traveled with Disney, but they brought their consultants. You know what that means, right? So they brought their actuary, they brought their physician leaders from Willis Towers Watson, and they brought a company called Imagine Health. How many people have interacted with Imagine? Yeah. So we call it Imagine Less Reimbursement. So it was clear. They were very clear about telling us all the levers they had and being very clear that they were going to pull all of them. And we said, no, there's a couple of levers we really need to focus on, you know, overutilization. I mean, no, there's these other levers like price. I think there's five price levers in those six that you had mentioned. With that also, then, they said, we need to complete an evaluation of your healthcare system and your ability to handle this. And, you know, at that point in time, I just laughed out loud. And they looked and said, well, what are you laughing at? And I said, that won't take you very long because we don't have anything. We're just starting. This is going to be a trust journey. If you want to work with us, you're going to have to trust that what we have got in the plans as it relates to the development of our network, the development of our infrastructure, that we're actually going to deliver that when your employees show up the first day. So don't ever underestimate that trust component in building that trust. That field trip with Disney built that trust. It built the trust for them to say to their consultants, this is a journey, and we can't expect them to be ready for this day one. And we'll show you a little bit about what that was. So in the fall, they came back of 15. They presented our market data, which we were somewhat surprised to see. They gave us our evaluation, which we weren't really surprised to see. And they laid out for the first time what their preferred contracting approach was, which suffices to say looks a little bit different than what we had had in those original discussions when we took the field trip. The consultants had kind of taken over and decided what it was going to look like as opposed to Disney. So from the winter of 15 to the spring of 16 was a negotiation period, weekly, if not multiple times a week, calls, meetings, numerous counterproposals back and forth. We signed a memorandum of understanding on July 27 of 2016, and we went live with the Disney lives as of January 1st of 17. So very intense period. I will remember from my visit to Seattle when the Providence Swedish team said to us, this isn't real until you sign a contract. Nobody at the health system is going to pay a whole lot of attention until you got a piece of paper that somebody is signing their signature on that's committing and obligating. And that is so true, that the amount of activity from July 27th forward has been nothing short of amazing to stand this up and be ready for the lives. So here was the first meeting. This is the Orlando I have a problem. So I'm not sure if this has got a pointer to it.
Top corner.
Okay. If you look at these dates, January of 2013, the blue represents the Florida HMO costs for the Disney population. The yellow represents all other. So recognize 70,000 employees, Florida, 185,000 worldwide. There was a difference, but it wasn't all that great. And look at this gap that starts to emerge in 13. Anybody guess what happened in 13? They introduced Kaiser in Southern California to their population. So the we have a problem is we can't sustain this. And you know, at that point in time, the Cadillac tax was lurking. That was a huge issue. It's interesting, as the Cadillac tax got delayed, and we said, oh, isn't it great news the Cadillac tax got delayed? They said, yeah, it doesn't really matter. We're focused on the cost now. We know you can do it. You're going to do it. The Cadillac tax is just a nicety of going away. So here was one of their other slides. So here is the 2014 non-Florida total cost of care broken down by inpatient facility, outpatient facility. Here's what Orlando looks like. Here's what the Florida HMO looks like. And here's what we project it to look like in 17 if nothing changes. So that's not necessarily a good trend if you're sitting in our seat. Because remember, we had heard from Imagine less reimbursement. There's six levers: price. So we kind of knew what was coming as they were going through this slide deck. This is inpatient prices. So once again, they're showing us that your inpatient prices are much higher than everyone else's. Now, we also now are very clear that you can make numbers say a lot of things that aren't necessarily true. And so part of the purpose of their consultants was to derive this information that they would not just put in front of us, but also remember who makes the decisions back in Burbank. So the insurance committee, benefits committee, who's making all these decisions is seeing these same slides. We're putting this all together. And so as we're going through the presentation, at the end of it, again, remember, just trying to bring a little levity, after this slide, I think, said, well, here's the average cost from a physician standpoint. Here's where your hospital-based physicians are. We have some very large ER groups, anesthesia groups that command premiums in the market. Here's your employed docs. I think it was at that point, well, no, it wasn't. It was a little bit further. Maybe it was after this slide, where they showed the overall hospital system quality score, and it showed us with the biggest bubble, which means we had the biggest share, but we didn't necessarily have the highest quality score. This is where I said, so why are you guys here? Why do you want to contract with us? I'm really trying to understand why you want to contract with us and not one of these other players. And, you know, that may have been a little bit of a breakthrough because it kind of created the, well, don't get us wrong. We understand this is just data. And part of what we want to do is enter in a journey that you can fix this, these things, but we need you. We need you. You're 50% market share in the Orlando MSA. We need you to be part of this journey with us. So, again, they hammered us, beat us up with the data, but I'll show you some things that show their commitment to really wanting us to make that data look good, and some incentives that they built into the contract. So here was their review of us. So there are two columns here, or three columns. One is a weighting. So governance structure, structural component, clinical quality and efficiency, care coordination, compensation, member satisfaction overall. This is where we were at currently, which said we were less than satisfactory when you do an overall score. But they also then did a future and said, we think you'll get to a satisfactory level based on all the plans you put in place. And there are a couple of things that were really good here. When they looked at things like governance structure, they said, we love what you've done from a governance structure. We love the fact that your docs are sitting at the table. They're engaged. We have six committees with 12 docs. We have nearly 100 physicians engaged, actively engaged in the management of the clinically integrated network. They love that idea. So ultimately what they said is, we're willing to take the risk with you after doing this. But this questionnaire was 71 questions, and it was about a 3-inch binder of responses that went back to them. We thought it was complete BS at the time. But in hindsight, it was probably the most valuable exercise we walked through because it told us where we were in the journey that we needed to get to. We envisioned what it looked like, but it allowed us to map that whole journey of what we were going to do. Jill's whole area of what we've done from a care management standpoint really started with that and looking and saying, we've got a lot of people, we've got a lot of touch points, but none of them are coordinated. How do we create a longitudinal care management program to service those employees, to service our employees, and really make this a great customer experience and a cost-effective and clinically high-quality product? So that was the summary. So after that then, they said, let us walk through with you what we think the path. Yes.
The future state that you have over there, it's surprising to me that there's two of those measures that, according to their key, they're only expecting you to get to falls below requirements.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
And one of them is really heavily weighted. So can you explain that?
Yeah. So stay tuned, because I think we'll cover that. And if we don't, correct me if I haven't.
Such an advanced thing.
So compensation... Yeah. So compensation and incentives will be an easy one to explain. Member satisfaction maybe a little bit less, and I think that's probably less of them understanding what we were trying to focus on. So here's what they said. So 2016, which by the way, we were at this point just coming into 2016, Has anybody seen this? The advisory board slide. This has been around and, you know, at many different conferences that says, you know, you start off, you have to learn the behaviors, you start a transitioning process, you start transforming care, and then you take risk. So this was kind of the glide path, if you will, that said, 16, we're going to just work together, we're going to start sharing data. 17, we're going to start transitioning. We'll put some incentives around reporting for quality and efficiency. And then we'll move to some outcomes-based incentives. And then we're going to go to a profit and loss sharing, so a risk-sharing kind of relationship. And so we were encouraged by this until we flipped to the next page. And they wanted to just reiterate the fact that you're high cost and low quality. We just want you to know that before we tell you what we really want. And then they went to this slide. And so they said, our trend has been going like this. We want it to go like this. So what we're proposing is a PMPM that's flat for the next 3 years. We started to panic a little bit at this point in the discussion. We're not accustomed to... So also remember, and we're the largest health system in the marketplace, so we're used to kind of telling people, including payers, what we want. We didn't realize they're much bigger than us, and they're used to telling people what they want. And so here we were at this point of, they're saying they want a flat cost. We're pretty clear we can't get there immediately. Remember what they said about their kind of that glide path of transitioning to risk? This one says 2017, we'll share risk. We'll share risk and we'll take risk. So two slides before, they had told us, here's our glide path. And then they said, but this is what we'd like to see. This is our preferred approach. And we said, guys, can we go back a couple of slides? Because we're maybe not putting this all together. So this was their initial ask. And the focus then, and if you look, very slanted, this was consultant driven. You know, so you're going to share 50-50 of the risk, but there'll be a cap on how much you can get from an incentive standpoint. So if you do really well, not so much. And then again, this movement towards risk. Then they start to talk about this. Florida Hospital would need to significantly reduce the price of facility services, 20 to 25%. So that's back to that weighting of compensation and incentives. Because part of what we said is we're now, at this point in time, moving into 16. To be ready for 17, we're going to have to, and Cigna was their TPA administrator in this process. We're going to have to use our Cigna contracts for 2017. We can be ready in 18 with our own fee structure, but in 17, we're going to have to use Cigna. So that's where they said, well, that doesn't get it, because if you use Cigna's rate schedules, then you're not able to reduce your fees, if you will. Similarly, reimbursement for hospital-based physicians, we said, that's a non-starter. We just put this network together. The first thing that we do is go back and tell all of our docs that they're taking a decrease. Hey, great news. We got a contract for you. Everybody take a 20% cut. That's not going to work. So you've got to work with us. And we kept going back to that slide two before. You know, again, just kept referencing where we were at with that. So that was the initial discussion. That's why it took us 6 months of back and forth and lots of discussions to come back to something that was much more realistic. To the point of benefit plan design, one of the things that I will say is that they, in the discussions with Intel, with Boeing, they've been consistent that they recognize that they have to be competitive in the marketplace. So they've got a lot of union considerations as well that they're addressing. They have a very rich benefit plan. But if you look at out-of-network services, these are just in-network only. They're very clear about that. They're willing to make changes. We're talking to them about diabetes programs for not just the population that we're managing, but for their broader population as well. We have things like televisits for urgent care that they've rolled out to all of their population, not just the population that has selected us. Now, one other thing to point here is that this was the initial component. they essentially said, we want to be able to have the employee premiums vary based on the cost of the plan day one. We said, well, you've already told us we're more expensive. We can't have that. So if you tell us, if you tell the employees that their premiums are going to be higher to select Florida Hospital, you're not going to have a test kitchen here. You know, you want a test kitchen to see who can perform better, because the other system in the marketplace, if we're at about 50%, the other system is at 35%, with HCA being the remaining 15% or so in the marketplace. So again, initial starting point, not where we ended up, certainly. And this was the upside. So 58% of the business in the marketplace was coming to us in total when you included PPO, high deductible plans and the like. We only had 10% of the employed physicians. So they're saying, look at all the rest of this market share that you have the opportunity to pick up. So again, a great slide, but realizing that the two alternatives they wanted to offer in the marketplace were us and the 35%. So really all there was 35%, or 15% of the marketplace for us to potentially absorb as part of that, and we were only going to get a component of it, we knew. So it took them a while, but this is, and I think this is really instructive, because really, Dennis, to your point of what were they really looking for? They were consistent from the beginning in saying, we want to drive something that will change not only our population, but will change how healthcare is delivered in the Orlando marketplace. So we believe that part of our task as the largest employer in the market is to help advance the market. It's no secret or surprise then that even though their benefits folks are located in Burbank, they're also, Disney is the co-chair of the Florida Healthcare Coalition, also the co-chair of the Pacific Business Coalition. Every employer that sits on that coalition side is watching what happens here. So again, one of these reasons of why would we pursue this? Half of it was fear of what happens if we don't, and half of it was an opportunity to really jump in, learn, and understand, and be able to be the best in our marketplace. So you see this drive improvement in quality and affordability of healthcare services in the Central Florida marketplace. And again, they showed us a lot of different analyses that we track a lot of things, as every hospital system does. You know, we've got analytics tools to track A, B, and C, but there's too many out there. Well, they found one that we don't track. And they found every component of that that made us look bad. So one is, we're one of the largest cardiac programs in the country. We're proud of that. Our clinical data from our registry perspective would show that we perform very well. When you look at some of the publicly reported data through Comparian care checks, it doesn't look like that. And so we brought our teams in and they explained, you know, well, this is administrative coding versus the clinical data. Here's our clinical data. They sat there and they looked and they nodded their heads and said, we really appreciate this. This sounds great. Now go fix it. That's what's reported publicly. That's what we've got to go tell our bosses that you look like. We don't have any of that other data. So you need to fix those things that are outwardly facing so we can hold out to our employees and to our leadership that you are a quality system as you say you are and as we think you are. That's why we want to do business with you. It's not because we believe this is really how it works, but it's what's available in the marketplace. So this is the HMO-like structure. So in 2017, we are utilizing our Cigna fee schedules, both from a physician standpoint as well as a hospital. In 2018 and 19, we will have our direct fee schedules in place with Disney, administered by a third-party TPA. The third-party TPA that they selected is Allegiance, so it's the Cigna wholly owned TPA that is not part of the main Cigna system. And you see there's two different plans, one with our competitor Orlando Health and one with Florida Hospital. So it is narrowing the network. The other lesson learned to me as part of this is an employer is very reticent to choose one system in a market that has got two big players, two or more big players. I know Seattle, I mean, there's many. But there's just too much political capital and risk. Even though we have geographic coverage in all of the marketplaces, they wanted to have two, and they want to have two horses in the race running against each other through the process. And we had to get comfortable that that's just the way it is, and we're going to outperform the other system. So we talked about signing the Memorandum of Understanding. It has a three-year term to it. There are annual out clauses if we would choose to want out. I didn't tell you in our history that back in the late 1990s, we had not such a good Medicare Advantage experience. So there's still some deep memories, and somebody made the comment, well, what happens if this thing really blows up? So we put an out clause in there to give some people comfort. It is a total cost of care model. We put protections in on plan design changes, outlier cost, out-of-network and out-of-area exposure. We have risk corridors with annual maximums. We've got an increasing percentage of risk share as well as risk opportunity, certainly. So we ended up a far cry from where we started with them, but it's still an aggressive plan. These are proposed quality measures that they laid out, more the traditional population health measures that don't cause us a lot of heartburn or grief. But I talked about the fact that they pointed to some areas that they really felt like we needed to improve in. So one were these comparison databases as it relates to complications, patient safety, and hospital readmissions. So in each of these, they said, you know what? We question, do you really think this is important, or is this just a way of you telling us that you wanted to negotiate with us? And they said, no, we will put, and this is not an insubstantial amount of money into this, so if you hit certain metrics, we'll pay you a bonus whether you hit your cost targets or not. That's what's important to us. We need to fix these things to show and have the credibility to show that you can do them. So I will tell you, in less than 9 months, we have fixed these. So we put the effort, in what you can measure, you can fix it, certainly. And here was the big one. So the big one was they wanted to use this employee premium mechanism. So one of the interesting things you might not know, theme parks, Disney, Universal, pay on a weekly basis. A weekly basis. So when they talk about weekly premiums, we were confused and said, isn't this incorrect? No, that's just the way the industry works. So a $2 or $4 or $10 difference in premium on a weekly basis is a lot of money to the employees who are buying this insurance. So they said to us, look, we want the ability to be able to put a premium differential in here if your plan is more expensive, but fix this complication rate and that all goes away. So again, it shows that there is an interest in quality. Perceived or not, there's an interest in quality and being able to go back to their constituents and say, we're dealing with top-notch organizations that if we recognize a problem, they can fix the problem. And nothing unreasonable in really what they asked for in this area. So this is like going after Medicare Advantage enrollment. So this is a picture of what we had in the backdrop of our booth at the Disney Benefits Showcase. Since they're a single site, they have a week that they funnel people in, employees from all over the 25,000 acres, to sign up for their benefits and walk through all of this. So these are some of the differentiators: coordinated care, comprehensive network, easy access, all of these things. And so it really is a beauty contest, if you will. So you're marketing what your network looks like. You know, so eCare, this concept of being able to connect for virtual urgent care visits, again, it created that differentiator that was one of the satisfiers that was a big deal to them. That's our booth on the top and the bottom left. That's our competitor on the right-hand side. A lot of activity in their booth, huh? Not so much, though. So we ended up with about two-thirds of the cast members who selected us, which was a huge win for us. Even though they got more, the competing system got more lives on a per member basis because they got some more of the pediatric lives. This was a big win because we had the cast members voting with their feet. And to go back to that, I got a call from the international benefits person. We had a smoothie machine in here, and she said to me, "That Mark, those smoothies must have really worked." I said, "This was at a Disney hotel, and we had to pay per smoothie from Disney." I said, "At the cost of those, I'm not sure it was worth it." And her comment to me was, "Nobody ever told you that Disney didn't like to make money." So that's an interesting comment to talk about the order of importance, right? So I talked about the Population Health Services Organization. So these are the primary components of what we were trying to build. We also saw this as an opportunity that if we're going to invest in this once, we're going to invest in it once. So the goal was build this for not just Central Florida, but build it for our East Florida, our West Florida presence, and the other Adventist facilities throughout the country. So we're providing these services to all three CINs in the Florida marketplace. You might ask the question, why do you have three? They really are three different markets, very different medical staffs, different concentrations, different mixes of population. And we're also looking at deploying this in three other markets from an Adventist perspective in some form or fashion, whether it's data analytics or care management. So we talked about the 100,000 lives. These are the populations with Disney certainly being at the core of it. What I will tell you is that having Disney in tow during the development of the clinically integrated network is why we are at 1,900 physicians with 100 people engaged in governance. If we didn't have that Cigna deal or that Disney deal, and all we said was we have our 40,000 Florida hospital lives, the docs would have said, "That's kind of interesting, but we already see them." So it really created energy and enthusiasm and the ability to pull them along, if you will. So what's different? We stood up a member experience center. This is, you're just saying, well, that's a call center. Well, it is and it isn't. So first of all, it is our connectivity platform. So we've got in this a provider resolution center as well. So the providers can call and have their issues resolved. But it's available by phone. We've got a link to chat so that a member can chat online with an individual. It facilitates appointments. It allows us to help them navigate through the system. And we've got our provider offices also calling here and saying, "I need a referral. I'm having trouble getting through. Can I just hand this off to you?" Or sending off notifications that they want to get something taken care of or refer to care management or whatever the case may be. And it also allows us to support care gap programs to really be able to look and help use this facility to do that. So those satisfiers, the web portal and mobile app, we've rolled something out called Hello Well, which essentially connects our members and gives them the ability to access clinical data, to access physician directories, to do online scheduling, connect through our eCare application to the virtual online visits. Again, this it was really interesting to watch as we showed this on a big iPad at that Disney Benefits Showcase, and the people that would just just hover over to that and say, so you're telling me I can talk to a doc live with my iPhone? And they said, yeah, where do we sign up for this? And so, again, it's those little things that really tie this together and give us that ability to satisfy. From an analytics perspective, so we use Exploris and MedInsight, Milliman's MedInsight product, from a risk stratification perspective as our primary health analytics tools. We're ingesting data that's essentially coming from all claims, our employed physicians' EMR. We're using Athena for our employed docs on lab results. And we're also integrating community physicians' EMR data from Athena and eClinicalWorks, and we've got a program that we provide support to be able to roll them over onto those. So we've just rolled that out and are getting some pretty good uptake as it relates to that. You know, Exploris, again, just giving access to docs, to patient registries and things that they just haven't understood in the past has been a real interesting process. We focused on looking at our top number of attributed lives and getting out in front of them and helping spoon feed them through. Remember, this is a very immature market. This has been a fee-for-service bastion, and so it's really a lot of education around what is population health management and how do we do that. I wanted to show you a couple of slides just to show you where the customer is thinking about IT. It's a lot further than we're thinking. So the ideal world, right? So the unfortunate part about our visit to Intel was they met the person who did the deal for Intel, who's since left and they've hired as a consultant, right? And so his vision is effective, efficient, want to be able to consume all patient data. Every physician should be able to access all data from any member who was seen in the system, whether they're connected via an EMR or not, and the thought process of using a health record exchange to be able to do that came up. And they're particularly focused on their population that's at their employee clinic. So again, 25% of the population. So us connecting them, their EMR back, connecting through a health information exchange with our competitor to be able to push CCDA documents through, and really to create a continuity of care. Same thing from our ED perspective. So again, it's helped us advance our thinking. We've pushed back on many points and said, this is a great theory, but a doc's never going to use this because it doesn't fit into their workflow. You know, we can find some alternative measures. But it's kept us connected, and it's kept us thinking about advancing the deliverable that we have. So from an IT analytics perspective, you know, if you look at the competitive advantage and moving towards predictive modeling, we are, with our own population, probably halfway there. We're really moving towards forecasting, predictive modeling, taking our own population and understanding. Jill's got some amazing data with her care managers that really can drill down and understand and take that diabetic patient. And so we had about, we have quadrupled the number of patients that we have under care management since we took the care management functions back in-house from our health plan partner. That's not any statement about our health plan partner. I think that's just our focus of how we're using that data to drill down. Because now, remember, we're getting clinical data coming from EMRs now. So we have data that we traditionally don't have in a health plan to be able to understand how to take action on that data. And the employees who are getting a call from the care managers are connecting much tighter with us now than what they were doing before. And we're interacting then with the PCPs and the specialists to help them be a part of that care plan as well. So we have a traditional care management approach. You know, which is no surprise to anyone. We identify them through traditional means to really be able to segment them into high risk, rising risk. We manage them differently, certainly. And so as I kind of step back and say, you know, where have we been on this journey? I would say that the first 6 months of our journey, when we stood up our CIN, and we had no data because we were ingesting all that data and trying to figure it out, it was a worrisome time. Because I'm thinking to myself, okay, we're all dressed up, but no place to go. And then we started to see that data come out, and we started to engage each of our committees, our utilization committee, our quality committees, and them starting to get involved. And they wanted to move a lot faster than I would have ever given them credit for. So again, what I want to get across here is that engagement of the physicians in this process at more than just the traditional level of how we engage physicians has been the most powerful change that's occurred within our system. So we've given docs a seat at the table, and I learned this from, anybody ever heard Lee Sachs from Advocate speak? So Lee made a comment one time, and I thought, wow, that is profound. And his comment was, given the same amount of information, a doc will make the same decision an administrator makes 99% of the time. The problem is we never give them all the information. And I just thought that was so on point, that when you put people at the same table, so from our board, the kinds of decisions we've made, we've not had conflict. So we built all these governing mechanisms in about supermajority powers and who does what, and everybody sits and says, yeah, we've done all the diligence, they've asked the right questions, and we move forward. So we've got that engagement that they then take back to the membership. Okay, I'm going to skip through these couple of slides and get to the, we're using Fitel. So we have Explorus, another IBM company, Fitel from a care management standpoint, so that information integrates together from the care management team. We've built our own dashboards to be able to help manage that care management process and drill down to member views. Okay, so rest of the story. I've said this multiple times. This created a platform for us to change that, absent this contract, I'm not sure we would have made change. It's easy to get caught up in the inertia of everyday life, and the fee-for-service business is great. This has really pushed us beyond that. Negotiating your first direct-to-employer contract with the largest employer in your marketplace has its pluses and its minuses. The pluses are everybody's watching. And so now there's a, when you call up one of the brokers in town or you talk to one of the large employers, they're saying, so how's Disney going? How many months into that are you? When are you going to come talk to us? What we always try to preface it is, you realize you're not going to get the same deal as Disney is, and don't believe everything you hear, because we're not starting there. communication and transparency are critical. There's been no point in this discussion where we haven't been completely transparent with Disney, completely, and it's uncomfortable at times because it's easier not to say certain things, but when you're transparent. And you tell them, we don't have that capability today, or we're going to work on that, but it's not going to be the way you want it, because it won't work in our system, and here's why. Because it's easy to get caught up in saying, oh yeah, we'll deliver that, we'll deliver that. And then if you don't, you've lost that credibility. And when I say all parties, this is internally as well as externally. So I think we've done a better job communicating with our docs, and our client than we have probably our hospital administrators. Because there's so many places that you just assume that if you communicate to this person, they're going to tell others. It doesn't happen. They don't have that communication. So that's important. I talked about data being used as a hammer. It was a huge hammer. I mean, it's embarrassing to sit and see information about yourself that's not good. Right? Even though you know it's out there, you don't know that other people know it's out there, right? And so, again, it then can be used as a real motivator to say, we've got to fix this, and we've got to fix it now. Change is only good when you're a part of it, right? Nobody wants to change, but if you're part of it, it seems okay. And then the last piece, don't underestimate the importance of relationships and trust. And I think that discussion about, you know, why did we do this? Well, 50% of it was we were fearful of what happened if we didn't. That's healthy. That's healthy because, you know, I'm not sure that if we said we weren't going to do it, that it wouldn't have had a bigger ripple effect than what we might have thought. They wouldn't have cut us out, I don't think. But I think they would have very much disincentivized from an employee perspective. And if they said, okay, it's going to cost $10 more per week to use the Florida Hospital Network, we effectively said no. Right? So we did our best to negotiate an arrangement that we felt like we could live within, and it would push us enough for us to be able to perform with it. And, you know, based on what we've seen so far, we're very, very hopeful that the amount of exposure we thought we signed up for isn't as great as what we believed it was, just based on where we stand today. Okay, so that's our story, and I'm sticking to it. Great journey. And, you know, the one thing I didn't address is probably how are the insurance companies in town feeling about this? Really nervous. So that's the other area that I would have had a different level of transparency. So we heard this at Boeing. Disney asked them the question, when did you tell the Blues that you were going to do this deal? And they said, well, or when did you engage them? When we told them they weren't going to be doing this anymore. And I wish I could go back in time and say to Disney, we're not going to do that with Cigna. We need to engage them and involve them in the process. But we did that. And it was very uncomfortable, and they were very threatened because they knew something was happening. And so I think it's damaged our credibility with them, even though it wasn't really our choice. So I would absolutely try to redo that if I had it to play back.
You mentioned that you started working with your own employees the year before Disney. What changes are you continuing to make with them? Are they running through this exact same sort of approach that you're taking with Disney, or are you doing less or more with them?
Great question. So we also made a commitment early on that whatever we do for Disney, we're doing for everyone else that we manage a population for, assuming we're providing the same services. So on certain things, we're doing them with Disney first, because we just had to from a timing standpoint. On other things, like care management, Jill's team has rolled out care management for our Florida Hospital employees first. And because Cigna is doing a component of the care management in 17. So we're using both and playing off, but the absolute focus is everything we do for one population is gonna be our model that we use for everyone. We don't wanna create two standards of how we deliver care.
I was going to ask if there's anything unusual, even unique, about the health status or the risk profile of the Disney population, what you've learned about them versus any of your other patients.
So realize that we're still ingesting information from Disney, so we've got the last 3 years of claims information that we're tying down and that we got as of probably a couple of weeks ago. We've gotten the last pieces of that. If you've been, you know, my perception was, even though I've taken my daughter there many times, my perception was it was a younger population, and that's not true.
Yeah.
There's a large group of older retired people who are part of that population. It's not the healthiest population. There's not necessarily, well, I have to be careful what I say. But when you walk through the park, it's not like there's a lot of vegetarian restaurants and such. I mean, people eat what they have to eat at work. So it's a large diabetic population. We're having discussions with Disney about how do we broaden our Diabetes Institute education program. We have a program called Diabesity, And it's gotten a lot of good uptake from one of our large county governments. And you know, the whole focus really is that you've got to create some sort of a compliance oriented program to be able to attract people in. So we're working with them. Those are the big things. Jill, have you seen anything else yet? As we've
obesity rates that I think is covered. Yep. Pharmacy is the other area we know. But like Mark said, we're still waiting to ingest the rest of the data. Any day now, we'll see the big picture, I think. So.
Luann, and then Corrine, and then...
I'm wondering if you can expand on bringing the care management in-house, and why you decided to do it, and were there any challenges as you did that transition?
So, and I'll let Jill jump in, because she's so much more adept than I am about this. It stuck with us, and it was a Presbyterian in Albuquerque that we first heard this, that they wanted to bring this that team closer to them from the call center and member experience perspective. One of the things our doctors said to us is the care management that happens today is completely out of our purview. We have no idea what's happening. The insurance companies are doing it. They're not connecting back to us. Part of our commitment to our physicians in this network was we're a physician-led, patient-centric network. So we wanted to connect with them. So we said we're gonna focus on bringing this back in, connecting to our physicians as part of the network, and working with the patients on behalf of the network and the physician. So when we call, we're calling with that patient understanding that we're also communicating this information back to your primary care doc. And so when they go back to see their primary care doc, they know what the care plan is. They know how that is integrated and fits together. And we adopted, as I said, this concept of our customer is the individual who consumes healthcare and the employer, and we want to be closest to our customer. We couldn't see how having that once removed was being close to our customer.
So everything that you just said, just coming from the provider side, I agree with. Matter of fact, at Network, we're trying to implement that with our provider owners, moving care management to the provider side. But talk to me a little bit about, in terms of infrastructure, whether electronic support, you know, in terms of systems or applications that you had to put in place, and how long did it take for your healthcare system to be able to implement that? And some of the, any tricks or advice that you would give for a health plan that's working in that direction?
Yeah, so I would say that we're still early in our journey, you know, because when we looked at our CIN base, aside from our employed docs that represented, you know, again, roughly 25% of the total, there were 138 EMRs. So we said, that ain't going to work. So we need to look and see where the biggest usage is and link those up. But early on, we made a decision that we needed to have one health information exchange data warehouse, if you will, and we chose Exploris at that point in time, and that was actually being used in our multi-state division outside of Florida. So we chose that, and as we were developing the care management process, it was kind of happen chance. We were looking, and Fitel was purchased by IBM while we were, Jill, I'm not sure, had we made the decision at that point before they announced, or was it right after?
Actually, it was probably 6 months after the purchase had happened that we made the decision.
Yeah. So we looked and said that can integrate in and allow us to really be able to use that information on a much richer basis.
I had a question up front, up front there.
Can you speak to any integration that you've done or plans to do so with the on-site clinic?
Yeah. We naively... We naively told Disney when we first met with them on our trip, said, you know, we really want to manage the on-site clinic. And then we got into it a little bit more and said, no, you know, maybe we don't want to manage it. So it's managed by Premise today. They do a nice job. They have a Greenway EMR system, so we're working to integrate and pull that data. back into our Exploris and MedInsight system to be able to have that that data available to us. But we're talking about, you know, do we ultimately put a care manager embedded in? They've got a space problem at this point in time. They very interested in playing with us and being successful in that. So we're starting with systems and then processes around care management.
Bob? We had one over here and then Mary Ann.
All right. So early in your presentation, you talked about being heavily a fee-for-service-based operator, and now you're taking risk, although it's not obvious exactly how much risk you're taking right now.
I'd have to kill you if I told you that.
Okay. Well, you remember, my earlier question was about state insurance regulators, so part of my question is, when does the state say you're actually functioning as an HMO that needs a license? But my first question is, where are the physician incentives in this program as it matures?
Yeah, so the physician incentives are built into they're built into our revenue streams come from three areas or four areas. So they come from care management fees that we derive. So in managing our population, we charge the health system a care management fee to manage those members. They come from quality incentives that we might earn or negotiate as part of the contract. And the third major component is they come from shared savings that we derive from the contracts. So those come into the top of the funnel, if you will, less the expenses of the organization. What's left over is available for distribution. Our model currently in the initial years is that 40% of that goes back to the hospital because the hospital's funded the infrastructure. 60% of it goes to the physicians, and then the finance committee, which really runs all of this, the finance committee of the CIN has a disproportionate share allocation to primary care physicians. And there's quality, what we call clinical integration score. So those dollars are set, but you don't earn them unless you've hit all the quality or you've earned a certain score from a quality perspective.
Mary Ann?
You talked about, for example, having to set up a separate call center because they're requiring concierge approach. So the risk you're taking or the clinical risk aside, how much do you estimate it cost you to get into this arrangement administratively? Things you had to add, or were you able to just repurpose people you already had into other functions, or?
We certainly repurposed, but we've invested significantly in this. I mean, we invested significantly for a couple of reasons. One, we knew that the Population Health Services Organization was going to be doing more than just managing the Disney risk or the employee risk, but it's also ingesting this data and helping from an analytics perspective for our hospitals to understand their cost structures and what they need to be working on. So there's other functions and tasks that are happening, the employed medical group and such they're supporting. But we also, I think, made this commitment that we don't know what we don't know, and we're gonna bring people in to help us understand this, and we're gonna commit a pool of money and know that there's not gonna be any return to that those initial investments, and we're gonna have to build our lives to be able to catch up to that. We didn't want to be in a position where we were constantly trying to catch up. So we've built ahead of that curve. Now, Jill will tell you that we're not that far ahead of the curve because she's wanting to add people and we're saying, well, wait a minute. But we have consciously known that we've invested. And I would say in the first couple of years, we're probably investing anywhere from $5 to $10 million a year. No. So now the other part of this is that we've the state of Florida Well, we have Medicare Advantage in East Florida. We'll bring that into our central market in 2018. We're looking at an MSSP addition, and the state of Florida is going through a re-procurement process for the Medicaid product, the managed Medicaid product, and so we're looking at that. We're a faith-based mission organization, so we're trying to understand, do we have the resources built at this point to be able to manage that as well? So it's giving us a whole new avenue of things to look at that we couldn't have looked at 2 years ago.
Victor?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for your compelling presentation. Would it be fair to say that it took an external entity, in this case Disney, to catalyze you to change, with the threat being market share and or financial health?
So I told you that at the beginning of 2014, I moved over from the medical group. One of our lead hospital administrators came over, David Banks, on the strategy side. So there was a commitment at that point to say, to get from first curve to second curve is going to require us to be thinking differently. We've got to build a team of people to help us think differently. Short answer, yes. A little longer answer, when I made, remember, I got charged at that meeting to say, okay, go figure this out. I remember it was about a group of this size of our hospital leaders, and I had a 90-minute presentation on what is a clinically integrated network that my time got cut to 45 minutes. And at the end of that 45 minutes, when I looked out, there was not one non-glazed look on their faces. And I know they were all saying, WTF. I mean, what is this guy doing up here telling us that you got to take patients out of the hospital, you got to do ambulatory, I mean, the docs are going to share in the yeah. money that we save? Are you yeah. kidding me?
I've had that experience. But the other point is that what they really asked you to do, and I think you referenced this, they asked you to do an integrated delivery system similar to Kaiser. That's what, in essence, this is.
So I wasn't going to say this, but I will.
We can edit anything out.
Yeah, yeah. So at the end of one of our conversations, I said, so is there you guys have just laid out a pretty aggressive ambition for us. Is there anybody that you could look to and say, they said, yeah, Kaiser. I said, so you want us to be Kaiser? We want you to be more like Kaiser. We don't want you to be Kaiser. We want you to be more like them. What they're doing works for our employees. And that was at the same time they told us, we've shown that in Southern California, that for $10 a week, our employees will move. And so when they started talking to us about a differential for employees, we were pretty clear what they had told us. And I think, you know, like most things, it takes an external influence to create an awareness to say, you know what, we need to move, and we need to move faster than what we're prepared to move at this point in time.
To add to what you said, I think what you said... Yeah.
Because our market's so immature, I think what you said was the language that made sense to our hospital leadership, but the true strategy is what our corporate leaders are trying to drive to move into value-based care. I think living in this two-canoe world, even today, I think we still struggle with our hospital leadership fully understanding this transition. And in our market, this makes up such a small percentage of the overall patients that our hospitals are seeing that even when we're trying to change how we're delivering care to accommodate things like this, it's very difficult to get that shift to happen. But when you start talking about market share loss and things like that, all of a sudden people understand what you're saying. And the glazed look goes away.
Other questions or comments? Yeah, go ahead,
Rob. What kind of market?
Can you give him
the
mic?
What kind of market share pressures are you getting from the other large employers, the city, the county, Universal? Because I'm sure there's the word's getting out. So what kind of pressures are you receiving from?
Yeah, they're pretty significant. the county governments and school districts are particularly, so we've done a deal with a large school district in the Disney County of Osceola, and so we've put an employee clinic in for them, and they've got 9,000 members, and in the first year we've seen over a third of their members in that clinic, and now they're wanting to wrap our network on top of that. But the governments are in a really interesting position. So the county government administrator told me about a year ago, he said, you know, Mark, all this stuff with Disney is interesting, you know, but as a county government, when my benefits cost increase, I can't go raise my ticket price like Disney and Universal and do multiple times a year, it seems. And so they need the help the most. And I think there's great opportunity in that those employers are willing to probably be a little bit more aggressive in exclusivity as well. So, you know, again, I think we're not going to give our best price to just play. I mean, but if we're going to be able to see a gain of market share by giving us some exclusivity, we may be willing to sharpen our pencil as it relates to price, particularly when we know we've built an infrastructure that can manage that risk.
A couple more questions. Joe?
So just real quick, you've gotten several questions about the care management system, and my questions basically revolve around that. So Health First obviously has some capacity to do this, right, because they're on the health plan side. Why did you choose to take the care management in-house, and did you have them sort of show you the way, or did you take basically hospital care managers and then try and change their mindset more towards a risk-based mindset? And then who handles the utilization management side? Because I could see where a lot of things could go wrong here, I guess.
Joe, do you want to answer?
If you have more questions, I'll come back to you in a second. Early results.
So when it was being provided by the health plan, it was actually outsourced, so it wasn't an internal capability that the plan had. There was almost zero reporting at all on outcomes or impact that the program was having, and the volume of enrolled members was extremely low, like less than 1%. So we just weren't seeing the results that we wanted. So it couldn't get much worse than that. Yeah, so we didn't leverage our hospital care managers because they are really managing episodes of care and focused intensively on utilization. Our focus was the longitudinal care management. Our mission for our organization is really whole person care. So our guiding principle was to develop a model where we could deliver that longitudinally based on the needs of the population. So we actually stood up our infrastructure based on the data that we had on our employees. What were the most prevalent chronic diseases, where do we need to have our biggest impact first? And that's really been guiding the entire development of our model. So today we've got 12 care managers across Florida employed, managing our employees and dependents. Like Mark said, we've got four times as many members enrolled already. We just started doing this in October, though, so we don't have outcomes data just yet, but things are trending in the right direction from all outward appearances. The feedback we're getting is good, and the experience is far greater for our employees so far. So I feel like we're moving in the right direction, but we're still very early in the journey. Oh, UM is still largely handled by the health plan. We actually worked really closely with them for about 6 months of last year to look at everything they were doing in the world of UM and disease management and complex case management to decide what made sense for us to take over and what made sense to stay with the TPA. And through that, we actually developed some guiding principles. And anything that was very closely tied to claims or authorization needed to stay with them. And anything that was closer to where care was actually being received made sense for us to handle. And I feel like that model is actually pretty reproducible with some of these other partners that we're going into partnerships with, because they won't necessarily be changing their TPA. So I think anything that's closest to where the customer is receiving care and allows us to work in collaboration with our providers just makes sense for us to do.
Great, thank you.
One more, any other? All right. Well, I don't want to put Brandon on the spot, but I will just a little bit, since Presbyterian's name came up several times. Brandon, from your perspective over the last 12 or 18 months or so since I think someone from Presbyterian kind of shared with the group, any lessons learned from what your work with Boeing and Intel that you would add to anything that Mark had, and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, I wish we had Boeing in Albuquerque, but no. In Intel, you know, in New Mexico, it's been a death spiral at Intel. So there's not a lot to add. I mean, it worked. It was wildly successful. I think the quality outcomes that came out of the arrangement with Presbyterian were exactly what they were targeting to do. So by all measures of success, it was very successful. But in New Mexico, they are in the process of downsizing their plant, getting out of New Mexico. Those facilities, they expire over the course of a couple decades. So we're down to like 3,500 members in this arrangement now and losing about 20% a year over year. So unfortunately, not a lot, but we built a lot of really cool infrastructure that has been leveraged to other large employers, those that exist in the market in New Mexico at this point.
So hopefully Disney will not be going out of business very... I since my entire family was down there last week, I don't think so. But you do learn from various markets, and so thanks, Brandon, for that. Any other questions as we wrap it up? Mark, thank you very much. Appreciate it.